Tuesday, 11th of May, Kof Zion Eor, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, Megillas Rus. This week's Torah Away has been sponsored by Nishmas Rav Ephraim Fishel, then Rav Yoel Aryeh Dick.
Good morning. The Yankees already started telling us about the Minhagim of Shavuos. It's in the Targum Sheni of in Megillas Esther, different Megillah. But one of the customs on Shavuos is to lain Megillas Rus. And don't be frightened by the piece in front of us. I've been criticised in the past for trying to pack too much into too short a time. The purpose of this is actually to give you an overview of all the issues which arise. We're not going to be able to deal with the majority of them. However, I would like to concentrate mainly on the hidden secrets in the Megillah. But before we do that, let's just quickly run through the questions on the list, so at least you know what to think about and to look for it. Obviously, the first question is, why is Megillas Rus in Kesuvim? It was at the time of the Shoftim. It should have been in the Nevi'im. That's question number one. Your next question is, it according to the Gemara, it's actually the very first Megillah, the first Sefer in Kesuvim. If you look through the list in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Gemara and Baba Basra, you'll see Rus is mentioned first, and yet you rarely find Rus first in any of our modern printed editions. Similarly, Rus should have been the first of the five Megillahs, but normally you'll find Shir Hashirim first. If you look, certainly in the printed editions at the back of your Chumash, you'll probably find that Rus is not the first Megillah to be mentioned. Then the question is, why is it a Megillah altogether? You'll find that the only Megillah mentioned in Shas is Megillas Esther. It doesn't have the status of a Megillah at all. It's one of the 24 Sephorim of Tanakh, the Chof Dalet Sephorim. So how did it qualify to become called a Megillah? Even the source for our Minhagim are complicated, because the earliest source to be found is Maseches Sofrim, and there it actually says that they said half on the first day and said half on the second day, because the Maseches Sofrim was obviously in Bovel, which was in Gola, so they did have 2 days of Yom Tov, so they did half on the first day and half on the second day. And they even, there's another shita there which says they used to start on the Motzoi Shabbos prior to the Shavuos. Now, I've never seen that minhag, but I've listed here four different minhagim which I am aware of. There's the first minhag is not to say it all together, Sheval Tas Odif. The second minhag is I've actually seen the minhag of Maseches Sofrim. The first time I ever saw it was when I davened once in the Ohel David Eastern, that's the shul of Rabbi Avrom Gabai, where the Sfarim actually did say half on the first day and half on the second day, I believe, and the same thing happened in Rabbi Basus's shul. So there are a number of Sfarim who actually say the first two chapters of Megillas Rus on the first day of Yom Tov, and then they say the second two after Mincha on the second day of Yom Tov. Now, we're not familiar with that minhag, we don't say it at Mincha time, but that's actually a minhag which seems to be quite prevalent among the Sephardim. If you look at through the list, you see that in the Hasidic places, mainly they just say it themselves after Shacharis, before Kriyas HaTorah, everybody gets the machzor out, and they just lay it each one for themselves. That's a very prevalent minhag, especially among the Hasidim. Where I come from, the Ashkenazim, we used to say the Megillas Rus from a klaf, with the bracha and with Sheikh Yonu, and that is the minhag in Machzik Yadas today. I think it's also probably the minhag in Gozbein B'Semedrash, even though they're not Litvish there. I think the Yekish and Gozbein B'Semedrash, but they seem to have the same minhag. And that actually is the minhag of the Vilna Gaon, who was very insistent that the Megillah be read properly with two brachas, of the Amikra Megillah and with Sheikh Yonu. There are other places where the Chazan does read it aloud, but then he reads it either from a Chumash or from a Megillah, or from a kosher Megillah, either but without a bracha. I've seen that minhag done as well. Haggas, where I often daven, seem to vacillate between the various minhagim. Originally they didn't say it at all, then they decided that people should say it themselves, and then one year they decided that the Shliach Tzibur should say it, but without a bracha. One thing to the consistency of that is they never made a bracha. But apart from that, the minhagim throughout my period in Hagas has changed throughout the time. And you do find this, that Kehillahs do change their minhagim sometimes. People feel it's such a wonderful thing to say Megillas Rus that they start introducing it, but very often they forget their own Masorah and their backgrounds, and very often what happens is different Kehillahs grow up and the different people join the Kehenda Nadas as an example of different types of background. You've got Hasidim and Misnagdim, which was when I first came to London, it was known to be a very cosmopolitan shul because he had all sorts of different types of minhagim. And for example, on Pesach night, you'll find that some people do say hello, some people don't say hello, and everybody shouts about it. So that's sort of a part of the minhag, if you remember. Anyhow, the next question is a very famous question, that if this is an important thing to do, why is it done before Kriyas HaTorah? We have two reasons why Kriyas HaTorah should be first. One is because Todir Sheinu Todir Kodem, and secondly, Todir Mekudesh, and Mekudesh is Kodem. So for both reasons, we should have said Kriyas HaTorah first and said Megillah afterwards. Now that kasha is compounded by the fact that if Megillas Esther is said after the Kriyas HaTorah, Megillas Esther comes after you've lain, then you sit down and lay in the Megillas Esther. But all the other Megillas, it's the other way around. Megillah is read after Shacharis, after Hallel, and before Kriyas HaTorah. This is a very famous and a very fascinating question that are a couple of answers to it. One of the answers is there's a difference between something which is a chiyuv, in which case the dinim apply in the order you've got to do it, and some were just purely a minhag. Since laning the Megillah is not a chiyuv as such, it's clearly a minhag, an interesting thing to do. Therefore, when it's a minhag, you've got the right to put it in where it fits best. And it seems very clear that these Megillahs fit best with Hallel, because Hallel is praise to Hashem, and the Megillahs fit with that. Whereas Megillas Esther, which is a chiyuv, everyone has to do it, then it's got to take its rightful place in the davening, which has to be therefore after Kriyas HaTorah for the reason we said. There are other suggestions, but that's perhaps the basic one. The next question, which is a very interesting question, is in Chutzlach we learnt on the second day, whereas in, of course, in Eretz Yisrael you don't have a second day, you'll have to learn it on the first day. The question is, why do we learn it on the second day? And it's often answered, well, could be because of Dovid HaMelech. David HaMelech is, according to certain opinions, died on the second day, which was some said day of Kabbalah HaTorah, was actually the seventh, not the sixth. The problem with that is that it just doesn't hold up, because there are other shittas who say very clearly that David HaMelech actually died on the day of Shavuos, which would have been the sixth. I can't go into that at the moment, but if you want to look at the whole discussion, there's a discussion in the Sefer called Alei Tamar of the late Dayan Tamar from Tel Aviv, and I've quoted it for those people who can't get access to the Alei Tamar. It's quoted in the Sefer Kol Ephraim, which at the back I brought it in one of the Nispachim there. It's set out in full, and you can see the whole discussion about that. But clearly, according to the Masechet Sofrim, was half on one day and half on the other day, and our minhag is always on the second day. I've also gone to try to find out why that should be, and as I've already mentioned, the reason of Dovid HaMelech, but I don't think that holds water. I think the basic answer, and there's a proof from the Prima Godin to this, is that you can't do it on the first day because you've been up all night. You're going to say Akdomas. You've got a whole lot of davening to do. So Chazal didn't want to be Matriarch and Sibyl to give them too much to do. You know, you've got to have Derech Eretz to other people. A Chazan who's davening at the Ombud and wants to sing a lot, he's got to think, is it appropriate to do so? First of all, is his voice good enough? I mean, that's a very, very subjective question. But even assuming he's got a good voice and he thinks that people are dying to hear all he has to say, then you've got to still think about what time you've got to get home for lunch. And if, in fact, you've got a huge davening, it's normal that any decent chazan will cut it short slightly in order to try to accommodate the tzibur. It's called tircha de tzibura. The chazan's view and the tzibur's view of what's tircha de tzibura don't always coincide, of course, but assuming that there is this principle, the Brim Hagadol suggests that, for example, on On Sukkot, the custom would be not to say the Megillah on the first day of Sukkot, because you've got the whole of the things you've got to do, a lulav, and you've got all the other things which are going on, and therefore it would be more appropriate to do the Megillah on a different time. Shabbos Chol HaMoed, you don't have to take the lulav, you've got more time, people are more rested, and so forth. And therefore, often for very practical reasons, the Chazal instituted the minhag to be at a different time. On Shavuos, therefore, it makes more sense to do it when people have not been up all night and are not keen to sort of get home as quickly as possible, and you haven't got the akdamos, and you haven't got all the other procedures, and therefore it became a more appropriate time to do it. So that could be just a simple practical reason why we do it on the second day of Shavuos rather than on the first. Now, right, that was just by way of a general background. As I say, I've left you with a number of questions which I haven't answered here, although I've given sources on the paper. Let's move now to a little bit more to the kesher between Rus and Shus itself. You see, I've set down here a number of reasons. For those people who really enjoy looking into and delving into things, if you look at the Hakadama of the Alkut Me'am Lois, he gives 20 different reasons why Shavuos is connected with Megillas Rus. There are, some of them are not all that different from each other, and you'll see on the list that I've given you, numbers 12 to 20, I've left them out here because there are only slight variations of the others. There are variations, and you can look them up. But the main ones, let's just quickly go through them. The Avudraham gives a couple of reasons. He says the time on which it was the action took place was the Zman HaKotzer. We know it was the Bitchilas Ktzir Ha Chitim to the end of the and the whole procedure took place in the Omer time. Therefore, it says the Megillas Rus is appropriate because of the time when it took place. Secondly, we know that Shavuos is a man of Kabbalah Satorah, and since Rus is an example from whom we learn the din of Gerus, we learn all about Kabbalah Satorah from this, as to how we, Klal Yisrael, were accepting the Torah in the Midbar. It mentions that they did Bris Milah, and they did Tevilah, and had to ask Domim, exactly like a Ger has to do and becomes a Ger, and Rus was such a Ger, therefore it's appropriate to lay the Megillah at Shavuos time. And there are a lot of other reasons which connect up the Megillah with Torah in one of its aspects. Most of the Alkut Me'am Lo'ez is 20 explanations tie up how you've got to learn Torah. For example, you have to have terrific Mesiras Nefesh, which we can learn from Rus. You've got to have Tznius Stick, learn from Rus, and so on. A lot of the limudim that connect up with the way to acquire Torah. Yalkut Shimoni, number 3 on my list, says here that the Torah is Niknis B'Yisurim. The only way you can acquire Torah is by Mesiras Nefesh and having Torah Niknis B'Yisurim, like Eretz Yisrael's Niknis B'Yisurim. I remember once I asked Rabbi Blopian, Zichron Levroch, he was learning in Gates, I said, Rabbi, you know, you're learning here, why don't you go off to Eretz Yisrael? You can go there. And his answer was as follows. He says, listen, the Gemara says in Ksubas that Eretz Yisrael is one of the three things which is only Niknis B'Yisurim. He says, I don't need to go there to get more. that was his answer at the time. I don't know whether he did that with Derech HaLotz or he actually meant it, but he stayed in Gateshead, as you are aware. Anyhow, we lay Megillas Rus on Shavuos according to this, because it shows the Yisurim of Normi and Rus in order to keep the Torah, and therefore we've got to learn from that. The Levush, he gives a different reason. He says that we know from the Chumash that it talks about Peah and Leket and Shikron Peah, and then it tells the Leoni V'la Geir Tazer or some, you've got to leave it for the poor people. And we learn from the Megillah that also you've got to leave for the poor people, because talks about Rus and Leket, etc. Now, where is the sugya of Leket and Peah mentioned in Chumash? If you have a look in the parsha, you'll see it's mamish next to Shavuos. Immediately after Shavuos, it talks about Leket, Shechon, Peah. So therefore, it's appropriate to learn the Megillah Sus to remind us we've got to be look after the poor. In fact, one of the other Medrashim suggests the reason why we learn Megillah Sus is because Tchilas of the Sefer Chesed is Chesed from beginning to end, and the Torah is only not only just Ben Adam Lamakom. Torah has to be full of Chesed. Proper Torah without Chesed doesn't work. It's not Torah at all. Therefore, you have to have the message from the Megillah of Torah, which goes together with Chesed, as we see again and again from all aspects of the Megillah, and particularly with Rus herself, but also with Boaz. We see the Chesed which they used to do, and that's the reason why it's particularly relevant to the time of Shavuos. The Sfas-Emes suggests that the whole purpose of saying it on Shavuos is because we want to make quite sure that when we got the Torah, it wasn't just Torah Shabiksav, it was also Torah Shabal Peh. And the Megillah Sus is one of the biggest proofs for this, because if we didn't have Torah Shabal Peh, we would have had no David HaMelech, and we would never have had Mashiach, because of the drosh of Moavi, Velo Moavi Yor, that enabled Rus to become a member of Klal Yisrael. When I say member, she could be anyhow, but she could become a miucheses, and she could have legitimate children, and David HaMelech came from that union. And it's well known that the Mepharshim suggests that that's another reason why we say the Megillas Rus on Shavuos, because Leyaches es David, to show that Mashiach will come, and it came at Shavuos time, was whether David died on the 6th or the 7th, as I said, that was a Shaila before, but either way, he certainly died around that particular time. There's a machlokus whether it was a Shabbos that year or wasn't a Shabbos that year. It's all interesting, but we do know that he passed away on Shavuos, and we want to be Miyachis David to show that he is was a legitimate offspring from Rus, and therefore it tells us the inyan of Torah Shebaal Peh. And Sasemis goes further. He says it tells us not just simply that he got a Torah Shebaal Peh with Torah Shebiksav, that true, but it tells us another message. It tells us you've got to have Mesiras Nefesh, as we mentioned before. And then he says, it tells us a third thing. It tells us that Torah and Mesiras Nefesh go together. That's the important message, he says. And therefore, it's Torah which is created through Mesiras Nefesh, that's the real Torah. So Torah Shebaal Peh needs Mesiras Nefesh in order to be Mekasha it, to tie it up with Torah Shebiksav. Then we've got another one here that the Yaakov Memorah teaches, if you want to learn Torah, like it says in Perek, Pamayim, Bamasura Tishta, Pastor Malach Tocha, you've got to be Mistapek Bamuat. And what can you see? You can see that Rus and Naomi were almost starving, but they decided that she wasn't going to go back to her wealthy life and to her enjoyment of Moav. And that's a lesson for us, that even if times get tough, we should still make sure that we keep our learning of the Torah, and that's also one of the Torah lessons which we can learn from the Megillah. He mentions one or two others, just very briefly. I've got it written down here that you shouldn't leave Eretz Yisrael unless you want to learn Torah. Elimelech left Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't go away because he wanted to start a yeshiva. He didn't go off to learn Torah. He went off because he wanted to get away from all the poor people who are driving us. And driving us mad. I often feel that sometimes I feel the other way around. I'd like to go to Eretz Yisrael to get away from the situation. It says you shouldn't leave Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't say you can't go to Eretz Yisrael to get away from it. Anyhow, another one here says you have to be prepared to suffer deprivation in order to learn Torah. This is very similar to what we just said before. There are a lot of sort of similar thoughts, which are just nuances of what we've discussed already. But from all that we've said so far, we can see there's very, very numerous reasons which make this Megillah Sus particularly appropriate for the time of Shavuos and Matan Torah, and that is why the minhag is taken on, and that's why most of us do Lein Megillah Sus in one shape or form, as we mentioned before. Now, I'd like to spend the last of the time just going through the Megillah itself. I've put down some beautiful Ramazim. First of all, the number of psukim is 85. That's a very significant number. 85 is the number of words for which is the minimum shear that you matzilin min hadilika on Shabbos. In the Sechus Yodayim, there's a Mishnah which says that if you have a safer Torah which has been burnt or torn, as long as you've got 85 words left, then it's still got the Dikdushas Sefer Torah and you matzilin min hadilika on Shabbos. Why 85? Anyone know why it's got 85? The number, exactly, well done, Maxi. The 85 is the exact number of words in Vayibin Sar, which according to the Gemara, one Shitta is, it's one of the seven Chumshei Torah, because we divided the Vindra into three. You start by Vayibin Sar, and that's a Sefer on its own for various reasons, and there are 85 words in that Sefer. It's also a very fascinating Targum Yonason. Sorry? 85 words in the Vayibin Sar, I think, no? Yeah. Is it letters or words? Oh, well, maybe it's letters, beg your pardon. Is it? Thank you very much, somebody's corrected me. He says it's 85 letters. Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, and this fits in with the Targum Yonasan's one I'm going to mention. Thank you for that correction. We've got a Barakora here who knows what he's talking about. 85 letters. It's in Targum Yonasan says on the Posse for Hazinu that there were 85 letters until you came to the Shem in Hazinu. Kishem Hashem Ekro. Check it out, there's 85 letters, and then you come to the Shem Hashem. Those 85 letters, says the Targum Yonasan, represent the sort of the smallest shear of Kedusha. And that is why you've got to realize, just because the Sfardim say more words in their davening does not make them better than us, Ashkenazim. I said this again and again. If you look at Yishtabach, we say fewer words. We've got a segula which they haven't got. We've got 15 words. They don't have that segula because of the joy of 15. You look at Kaddish, they say Yatsmach Bukhane Bukhane Meshechei, and they mess up the number completely because we have 28 words and they don't have that number. So very often in Ashkenaz, because we say less can be better, as long as you know what you're talking about. Now, if you look at Kedusha, both in Shachris and in Musaf, you will find that there are 21 words before you come to the Shem Hashem. And because the Targum Yonasan, which I just mentioned about the 85 letters, says at the same time there are 21 words before you come to Shem Hashem Ekra. 21 words, and then you come to the 22nd, which is Hashem. And the relevance of this, actually today, is the 22nd time that I'm saying that the does tear away. So I've had 21, and now the next one is the Shem Hashem, which is Kedusha. So, I just thought I'd put that in. But the 85 is what we're talking about. You'll find in Nusach Ashkenaz, in Nusach Ashkenaz we have 21 words before we come to the Shem, both in Shachris and Musaf. Nakadish until you come to Kodesh, Hashem Tzavakos. And there's 21 words in Shachris, and the same in Naritzcha. But you look at the Sfardim, you've got different altogether. However, the 85 doesn't quite fit. Well, it's the same as the Sfardim, more or less the same. Now, so, however, you will find in Kedusha the 77 letters, and the 77 is also relevant because in the Megillah we have 77 psukim starting with the letter Vav, and 8 psukim which don't have a letter Vav. The 8 psukim, according to the Mefarshim, will give you the Yeshaya, the letters Yeshaya ben Levi, and that is the Shlo HaKodesh. The Horovitzers have come from the Shlomo Levim, and he was Yeshaya ben Avram Alevi in Rosh Hashanah. So you look at the 8 letters, you'll see Yeshaya's Yud Shin Ayin Yud Hey Beis Aleph Lama. Those are the 8 word psukim which start with out of Vav. They were one of the other letters, and so they say that the Shlomo HaKodesh was a Gilgul of Boaz. This is in Kabbalah. I can't verify it. I just what I've read. Now, however, there's another simple pshat. Is this 77 is as strength, power, as kanoma. You've got to be the first thing in the morning when you wake up. You've got to be as kanoma. And Then you have eight more, which are not with the Vav. Eight is always Lemalo min ha-teva, as everybody knows. Therefore, it's indicating that this Megillah is showing Azus Lemalo min ha-teva. Rus, in order to get what she needed to get, had to show Azus. Azus doesn't mean chutzpah. Azus, that's Azus ponim. Azus means you've got to be prepared to remove any other factor from your life and just, I'm going to do this come what may. Whoever might try to discourage you, whoever may make fun of you, I can imagine Rus's friends in Moab weren't too pleased that she became a Jew when she was a Moabitess princess. But she stuck to her guns. She wasn't going to be put off by anybody. And even when Naomi sent her home, she stayed as she was strong in what she did. So she showed Azus Lamala min ha-teva, and that I think is why that Az and the Ches, that's the 77 together with the 8, have a remez simply in the opening letters of each pasuk. Let's mention some more interesting things. I don't want to forget this Ohel David. The Ohel David is Rav David Kahn. He found something quite remarkable. He said, if you take all the kris and ksivs in Megillas Rus, and that means there are words which we put in and the words which we don't say altogether. A lie is put in when, even though it's not there, and there's words which are left out even though they are there. But if you take all the kris and ksivs which are actually pronounced, you'll find the gematria is absolutely identical. The same number going out is coming in. It's as if the Megillah had to be the same, and the fact that we have these increasing sifts, they balance themselves out exactly to you'll see there's a list at the bottom here, it set it all out how you get to that number. There's 102 and each way, 102 left out, 102 actually. It's a remarkable discovery. Going to the number of times that people occur, I've set them out here as well. Boaz occurs 20 times, which is, connects him up with Avram Avinu. Remember, the Avram Avinu is always connected with the number 20, the 20 Doiris until Avram Avinu. We have various other Lemozim to that. Normally is 21, which represents the Aseres HaDibros, because they start with the Aleph of Anochi and they finish with Reacha, which is a Chof. It's well known that the 21 is the number of the Ach of the Aseres HaDibros. Rus occurs 12 times. That's also an interesting remez that she joined the 12 Shvatim. Mephoshim suggests that that's the connection with particularly with Rus. Hashem occurs 18 times in the Megillah. This time that it was Shemayin Esra and with davening. All these have got deeper significances. But all right, that's each one has got to occur a certain number of times. But there is always, seems to be in the Megillus and in the Sifrei Kodesh, the number of times that things occur have a special significance. If you remember, we discussed that once with Homon and Esther in the Megillus Esther. There is always a reason for it. But now, one thing very remarkable, however, is this. Let's just point out Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. Rus is called HaMoaviah 5 times. She's 12 times altogether she's called Rus, of which 7 she's just called Rus. 5 times she's described as HaMoaviah. Of those 5 times, 4 of them she's Mole, and only 1 Chosa. Now why should that be? Why should she be 4 times Moaviah Mole and 1 Chosa? And Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky comes out in his usual inimitable style, and he suggests that the reason is that on the 5th occasion she'd become Jewish, she'd become properly accepted into Klal Yisrael. If you have a look at the actual posuk in chapter Dalet, posuk Yud, that's the final time she becomes without a vav. And the answer is because once she'd become a proper she'd been accepted as a proper Jew, she lost her Moabite character to some extent. The gadlus of Rus was that she's managed to transform the Psulim of Moav, the bad, the chutzpah, and the azus of Moav, and she used that Lashem Shemayim and that noble for the right purpose. So the first 4 times she was still a proper Moavir. But once they made the psak that she was allowed to marry into Yisrael, and she was a proper Gioris in the not only in the form of the girls, but also the fact that she was no longer apostle of God, she then lost the Moabic character and she became without the Vav. One or two more things. You'll find one of the most striking things through the Megillah is the constant changing of the gender from masculine to feminine, from feminine to masculine. Now, that is a simple device that if something is in the masculine, it's considered to be more spiritual, it must be more powerful. It doesn't mean in any way that the men are better than women, it means men are different from women. And It is, everybody knows that men have more power than women, and the monks made, I think they made a study of this many years ago. I read in Reader's Digest that on average a woman has 65% of the strength of a man. And they did this when they went to bang these, what do you call it, they bang these with a hammer, that you bang the thing and the thing jumps up. No, it's got a special name. Anyhow, they found that the man managed to get one third more strength into it than the ladies. And they also did another thing in the Reader's Digest there many years ago. They made a survey of GCSE and A-level results. It was actually O-level and A-level results, now it's GCSE, and they found that on average, the girls did far better at O-levels, but on average, the boys did far better at A-levels, and they couldn't understand it, but simple, because girls have a much wider view of things, they're able to have a much more balance and they're more reliable, but men can actually concentrate on one thing only while they're doing it, and when they concentrate, they do it well. Therefore, we see from that that the Torah knew all this, and the Torah knew that the masculine represents reaching heights, whereas the feminine represents more breadth rather than height. And if you look through the Megillah, you'll find whenever the women are doing something really, really good, it'll change to the masculine. So, for example, it says about that, asisem with a mem, chesed imodi. You did masculine, because they acted like men when they did the kavura and they did their chesed. However, when the men behave badly, or they behave in an effeminate manner, it'll change the men into the feminine. So you find in the Megillah, it says, halohein teogeno. It's talking about men. They're not halosh, but halohem teogeno. But if you think about it, what Naomi is saying is, if you men, if you ladies are going to wait for a man to grow up to be old enough, well, they were 60 years old at the time, and you're going to have to wait another 13 years until a man can be born and get married, that man who's going to marry you is going to be somewhat unusual, is going to be somewhat not the normal thing for a 13-year-old boy to marry a 73-year-old lady. And therefore, he said, it wouldn't be appropriate or correct, and it would be somebody, you'd be, to be taken like a gigolo, you know, the halohein with a nun. Oh, time is up. So we'll just finish off. You also find in one place, it says shtehen. Shtei can't be shtehen. It's either shtehem or shnehem or shtehen. How can it be shtehen? Sorry, how can it be shtehem? Oh, I get it right. You can't have that. It's a hybrid. But the answer is that that situation, if you look in the Megillah, you'll find that they showed aspects of both male and female. And therefore, although it should have been either shnehem or shtehen, you find a pasuk shtehem, because they showed both feminine and masculine characteristics. The Megillah is full of those things. I think time is up, so we've got to stop. I just want to mention one final thing, and that is, if you look at the names of the people in the Megillah, the Gemara says that this wasn't their correct names, they had other names, but every one of their names represents their facet of the lives of the people who were mentioned in the Megillah. I have set down the Makoros here in front of you, you can look at it, but Rus in particular, I've given here six different explanations as to why that name was Rus. And it says in the Medrash that when what happened was that one of the Talmudim says, why did Rus not change her name when she became Jewish? After all, you know, you get somebody who's called Christian or called Thomas, when he becomes Jewish, he usually take a Jewish name. Why didn't she take a Jewish name? And he says he did take a Jewish name. Originally, she was called Gillis or Polanya. But when she became Jewish, she actually did change her name to Rus. Now that she's changed her name to Rus, we've got to know why she chose that name Rus. And that's where you've got the explanation. One, because of David HaMelech. She wanted to be the forerunner of David HaMelech, who gave pleasure to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who serenaded HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the second reason is because she saw Divrei Naomi. She understood the Lashon of Rus, of seeing things properly. Some said because of the Gematria of 606. And then she took seven mitzvahs to make 613. Some says Yoras. Rus is the same as Yerusha. She got inherited the Torah, so to speak. And then it also says she became like a Tor, the Tor in Bnei Yonah, the two kosher birds. She became kosher like the Tor. And finally, there's a last word which I mentioned here, that she retes, Lashon of terror. She had Yiras Shamayim. So all this is included in the name Rus. And the others have also got the reasons for their particular names, but we've... I've gone over time. I'm sorry, I have to stop now.